Hey everyone, and welcome to the Dissection Room podcast. My name is Justin Caudill, and I am extremely excited about today's episode because this is something I've been wanting to talk about for years now. We're going to be talking about drug discovery. This is a continuation on our series on how AI is revolutionizing healthcare and medicine, and drug discovery is about as revolutionary as it possibly gets. Now, there is a ton to this episode and what we're going to be discussing. So if you don't feel like listening or watching the whole thing through, I'm not going to fault you for that. You will find timestamps if you're watching on YouTube in the description below, or if you're listening on Substack, Spotify, or Apple, you'll find those in the show notes. So feel free to scan through the episode, find the most relevant parts to you, but I do promise it will make the most sense if you listen to it end to end. Drug discovery is nothing new. It's just medicine, and humans have been chasing new medicines ever since we realized that medicines existed in the first place. Right? We're talking about potions, tonics, salves, herbal teas, and chemically modified laboratory pharmaceuticals. Each of these are chasing the exact same goal. They want to either treat or alleviate a problem, prevent it from happening, and they want to do that with zero side effects and as cheaply as possible. I mean, as close to free as you can get, that's the goal. I mean, this is why alternative medicines are, people have such hope for them, because if you could take a leaf, dry it out, crush it up, stick it in some water, and then drink that water and fix a problem or prevent it, it doesn't get any better than that. This is what every drug is chasing, right? Zero side effects, as cheap as possible, fix the problem or prevent it from happening. The problem is that is extraordinarily difficult to do. Now, there are many different reasons why this is so difficult. And what I want to do to help bring this home is let's try to view this through a scientific lens as though we are working at a pharmaceutical company on a research team trying to bring a new drug to market. So the first thing we need to be able to do is identify relevant biological targets. So let's say we're trying to treat a disease. Let's say it's multiple sclerosis. So that's a disease of the central nervous system. Well, there's a lot of different cells in the central nervous system. There's a lot of different proteins on those cells. And then if you were to zoom in on the proteins, there are a large amount of binding sites on those proteins, or at least there can be. You have to find the relevant binding sites that are going to impact the progression of that disease. You can't just give some chemical, some molecule as a treatment, not knowing where it's going to bind. You need to have really good evidence that it's going to bind exactly where you want it to, and it's going to have the effect you want it to. So that also means, besides identifying the correct target for a binding site, you also need to have a good lead. A lead is like the treatment protein. So what's going to happen is these two need to be able to bind together and have the action you want, which means not only do you have to find a lead protein, you need to be able to optimize that to the best of your ability. Meaning, so for instance, proteins can actually bind to multiple different other receptor sites. This is where it's all about selectivity. So for instance, just because you find a great lead that binds to the target you want, doesn't mean it won't also bind to another target somewhere else and have some other action that you don't want. So what you have to do is try and make this as selective as possible to get only the target you want it to get. You also have to think about pharmacokinetics. Pharmacokinetics is how does that drug actually move through the body? What is the liver going to do to it? What are the kidneys going to do to it? What happens when that molecule interacts with muscle tissue, with fat tissue? Because when you put it in the body, it's going global. So you need to be able to say, oh, this is not going to be affected in this tissue or that tissue, or we're accounting for that effect. That is a big thing. So when you're starting to put all that together, you then have to understand, you need to know how this is going to impact the disease, and you can't just start giving that to humans, right? So like if I'm trying to treat multiple sclerosis, I can't just go give that to someone with multiple sclerosis in early trials. Like, I mean, that's not even early trials. That's like, we're talking like the earliest of stages of development here. That's unethical. The problem that you'll find in drug research is creating an accurate disease model. Like this is like a cell-based assay, or this is a, say like animal models. Are you putting this in mice? Like that, mice are great. They really are. They're cheap. They're mammals. They're really easy to reproduce. I understand why they are so ubiquitous inside of science. The problem is, mice are not humans. So sometimes the science translates really well. Sometimes it's perfect. Like what happens in the mouse will happen in the human. But it usually doesn't work that way. And so we have to try and account for that. So depending on how you're trying to build your disease model, I mean, that can be extraordinarily challenging when you're trying to work into these different targets, the different lead proteins and everything that goes with it. You then have to think about toxicity and potency. So for instance, if a protein, a lead protein, binds to where you want it to, how long is it staying there? What's the duration of its effect? What's the intensity of its effect? Right. This is really important stuff. And again, if it's not as selective as you want, what is it doing at other sites? Or if it is only binding to the one you want, still that may not be like you only get the effect you want. You might get other side effects. So you have to be able to account for those and decide this is still desirable. So that's very difficult to do, to determine the toxicity, the potency, to optimize its movement. And then on top of that, you have regulatory issues, right? So here in the United States, we have to deal with the FDA, and the FDA has a whole series of different clinical trials and phases of drug development and trials that you have to go through. You have to understand this whole process takes time and money. It can take around 10 years from concept to actually being marketed towards a patient. 10 years, hundreds of millions of dollars, even up to $1 billion can go into the development of a single drug. That's obscene. And you have to understand, most of them fail. So you have this, so you're putting all this money, time, effort, energy, everything into this drug development, and then it doesn't go anywhere. It fails at some point in that process we just discussed, and so then it just gets shelved. So then you think about like competition. How does a startup, how do these other companies who want to kind of try and compete with the pharmaceutical companies, how do they do that? Because if they get, say like they get $500 million in, you know, venture capital, well, what happens if that drug fails? That money's just gone. So this is where you start seeing what, you know, people often will call big pharma, like your Moderna, your Pfizer. So you have, these are massive issues that are really difficult to overcome. You can see why it's really difficult to create a new drug and to create a great drug, one that does exactly what you want it to do. Because we have ways of trying to find those binding targets, of finding those lead proteins, but that requires a lot of expensive equipment. And again, you need qualified people to be able to do this. And so there are so many barriers that that's what's creating the bottleneck in terms of development. These are all things that we need to overcome. Because we've all been there. We've all seen the commercials, at least here, if you're here in the United States, where, you know, it's like these people in a field, you know, they're taking their awesome medication and then the side effects are obscene. This is a complicated problem where there's so much potential here. But how do we get rid of all those risks? How do we make this as safe as possible? How do we make this as cheap as possible? This is the problem that we're all, and the pharmaceutical industry has been facing for so long now. Now, this is where AI comes in. And specifically, we're going to talk about the company DeepMind, which is now owned by Google. So you may have heard of DeepMind before. They are the same company that built the AI systems AlphaGo and AlphaZero. So AlphaZero was dedicated to mastering chess, and AlphaGo was dedicated to mastering the game of Go. Now, these are games, obviously. Now, what's interesting about this, though, is that they are very simple games, right? Think of a chessboard. There's only so many spaces, and there's only so many positions, and the pieces can only do so many things. Turns out, though, that's still an astronomical amount of possibilities, and the game of Go, which if you haven't seen, they're like little black and white pieces on a grid system, really fascinating game, really complicated game, but it's very simple in its, you know, basic structure. Well, what they did is they designed these AI systems that essentially at the beginning of a day doesn't even know how to play chess. And then after a few hours, it's better than every human that's ever played combined. And so it's a really interesting thing. Well, what they decided to do, though, is once they built and mastered chess, mastered Go, they wanted to tackle real world problems, real scientific problems. And so the one that they decided to go for was called the protein folding problem. Now, we've more or less known of the protein folding problem since we discovered the central dogma of molecular biology. I'm being a little bit loose with my times and everything, but this is more or less accurate. So the central dogma essentially states that information is stored, again, in DNA, and then that's passed to RNA, that's passed into amino acids, and then those amino acids fold into proteins. So you can think like into DNA, A, T, C, G, that is information. RNA will copy that, and then that is actually built by ribosomes into amino acids, which are molecules. So they're atoms. So you have like carbon atoms, you have like amino groups. And then in human beings, we have 20 amino acids that make up all of our proteins. I mean, there are some non-standard amino acids, but we're just going to leave that out of the conversation for now. But I want you to think about this. If you recall to what I was saying earlier, you're essentially proteins wrapped in fat and fueled with sugar. All the proteins in your body are made up of 20 amino acids. They're just in different sequences and of different lengths. So you have 20 amino acids, but the protein could be 500 amino acids long. It could be 1,000 amino acids. It could be 10 amino acids long. But what's been fascinating and really frustrating and mysterious is depending on the sequence of these amino acids, the protein folds into a specific shape. And we don't know why. I want you to think about this, because one of the biggest problems with drug discovery is identifying the proteins and finding the binding sites. Well, if you have, and to just give you an idea, by the way, there are more possible ways to fold proteins than there are atoms in the entire universe. That number doesn't make sense, right? That's a ludicrous number that is impossible for the human mind to fathom. So to think that we could just sit there and be like, oh, I'm gonna predict this really easily, right? It's like solve it like a Rubik's cube. You know, I'm gonna stuff all these amino acids together and then I'm gonna fold it. This is such a difficult problem. And this is where so much research and development goes into, is figuring out these target proteins, these lead proteins. And so this has been a huge problem. So what happened is, again, we've known this for decades. So back in the 90s, a competition was actually created called CASP. I forget what CASP stands for, actually, now that I think about it. But what they were doing is they were meeting every year, and groups of scientists and just nerdy people all over the world, what they would do is they would try to predict and try to figure out this folding problem. And then they would come together, and whoever could predict it the closest. So basically, they would be given an amino acid sequence, and they would try to predict how it would fold. The group that got closest to it would win the competition. But they would win this competition by getting like 40% of the way. So they were only 40% accurate. Well, in 2000, and I think like at first it was 2019, but in 2021, DeepMind came into this with what they called AlphaFold 2. Again, this is their AI system that is built in the same fashion as, say, like AlphaGo, AlphaZero, and this was able to predict proteins with 90%+ accuracy, its shape and its structure, meaning not only do we know how it's shaped, we know its individual atoms. This is huge. This is absolutely huge. It just blew this competition completely out of the water. You know, people were saying all over the news, like the protein folding problem has been solved. It hasn't actually been solved. There's still a few things that need to be discovered and figured out. But 90%+, to give you an idea of how big this is, DeepMind then made this free to the public, free to researchers through their Google Cloud and their developer cloud system. So what can happen is researchers all over the world can start to reference this and have a starting point for protein shapes. This is absolutely huge. Now, to give you an idea of just why this is so massive, I have a list that I'm going to go through of all the things that it's currently impacting and will continue to impact when it comes to drug discovery, research, and development. So first of all, and we've already discussed this, we have faster and cheaper target identification. So you're able to find those target proteins on the disease proteins, you're able to find the lead proteins. There is a lot of time, effort, and energy saved here. Just to give you an idea, historically speaking, PhD students would spend their thesis working on a single protein shape and structure. That's obscene to think about the amount of time, effort, and energy that went into discovering one. If I'm remembering correctly, last I looked sometime in 2023, DeepMind has identified 214 million different proteins that they have predicted with over 90% accuracy. We used to only have 300,000, and those 300,000 or so, those are all basically coming from graduate students and PhD students and just research scientists that are being forced to spend significant amounts of time, effort, and energy on discovering the shape of single proteins, one by one. 300,000, now we have 214 million. To say that this is saving time and cost that on in that aspect of drug discovery and development, I mean, that is massive, absolutely massive. Next, this reduces the need for experimental validation. So typically what would happen, so if you discover these proteins, these lead proteins and disease target proteins, you would then have to perform experiments with them and try to figure out, no, is this really the target? Is this really the protein I want? Well, now you don't have to do that much because you can rely more on computational methods because what you were trying to do beforehand is determine, is this a good lead? Well, now you know it's a good lead with at least 90%+ accuracy because you already have a bunch of that work already done for you. So that is absolutely massive. Next, it improves virtual screening. You have to understand that there are a ton of proteins and molecules that we already know their structure, we know their shape, we just don't know if they do much, right? So they're part of what are called like virtual libraries. And so what we can do is we can try and take these different molecular shapes, these different amino acid sequences that all we already know, and we can try to compare them to the predicted shapes from AlphaFold. And so what we can do is if we're trying to, create a lead protein or identify a lead protein to target a specific disease, and we know it's this shape, we can look through an existing library and find one, and then we might be able to find therapies from almost pre-existing drugs. And that's the thing, we can also repurpose drugs. So, because we can do the same thing. Let's say if we find a molecule from some other drug that fits the goals that we have for this new disease that we're trying to treat, we may be able to just move that drug over. It's like, oh, cool, we're going to take this drug here and put it there. I mean, again, think like Ozempic. Because Ozempic is an anti-diabetic medication that also treats and works with long-term weight loss. Now, obviously, those things, I'm not trying to say that Ozempic is a product of AlphaFold 2. If it is, I don't know that. It may be, but I'm just trying to say, like, you can find alternative uses for drugs. We do this all the time, but now it will be easier to absolutely repurpose that. But the one that really excites me, I shouldn't say the one, they all excite me, is we're going to have reduced failure rates, because especially in clinical trials, because if we have, again, 90%+ accuracy on these proteins, we're going to go into things with a lot more confidence. We're not going to have as many failure points because we've already planned for those. We've built around that. And so we have a more streamlined process that we can start pushing these drugs through a little bit quicker. Now, that scares a lot of people. And a lot of people get worried, especially, you know, coming out of COVID with all the, you know, worry that came around the mRNA vaccines, just like, oh, how much time has been spent on this? You have to understand that just because a drug gets pushed through quicker doesn't necessarily make it any less safe. Because you have to ask yourself, well, where are we saving on time? Because if you're saving on time in places that would just be honestly just wasted, and you're trying to find the shape and structure of a protein, but now you already have that. Let's say, because remember, if it takes about 10 years on average to build an actual drug, let's say if we reduce that in half and it goes to 5, it's not as though that is twice as unsafe, or we haven't done, you know, the correct amount of experimentations and clinical trials. It's just saying we've saved time to push it up. So now we can actually spend time on those clinical trials. And even within the clinical trials themselves, if a lot of this was, we can solve computationally, that can also accelerate the delivery of that drug. Now you have to understand, COVID was a novel situation. That is not going to be the norm where we're just pushing out drugs literally as fast as we possibly can. My point is simply, we are going to be reducing failure rates, which is going to dramatically lower costs of drugs, and we're going to start getting them out quicker. Again, there's a lot of infrastructure that also has to be built around this in terms of like, oh, we have to build this drug, that drug, this drug. But just think about this. What we're also going to start seeing is competition for these pharmaceutical companies from smaller companies, because now we're lowering the barrier to entry, the costs associated with drug development, but we're not necessarily getting rid of safety. We're not making them less safe. Just because we're going quicker, we can still demand and will demand the same amount of efficacy, of safety. You're still going to have to go, you're still going to have to meet the same regulatory hurdles, but all of this is being pushed up. And so what we're going to start seeing is globally, pharmaceutical competition is going to start to rise, and we're going to start seeing more targeted drugs. And this is where I get really, really excited, because when you start to look at this 10, 15, maybe 20 years down the road, and it's hard to always put numbers on this. And I never want to be that person who's trying to make just predictions, because then you're almost beholden to those dates. And though it's like, in fact, the point I'm trying to make here is this is the beginnings of real personalized medicine. And there's a lot of startups and a lot of companies out there that are really making effort with this, with the help of AI like AlphaFold. And then when you start combining other AI models that we've talked about in previous episodes, and you start putting that together with this, these potential impossibilities, what you're getting closer to is personalized and precision medicine. This is where we can look at you, look at and create drugs that are for you. Not just drugs that will work for you, but drugs that are for you. And they're going to have very minimal, if any, side effects. Again, we're getting to that point, and I don't want to just be jumping on the hype train, but just think about that. The more precise we can get, the more we can mitigate collateral damage as we're delivering these drugs, this is where we start to make real, real impacts on people's lives. We start to really change lives. And it gets into also really exciting territory in terms of longevity. And I'm going to be doing a future episode on just longevity, increased lifespan, also quality of health, not just time that you're on this planet, but also your life is going to improve. There is so much possibility that comes with just identifying protein structure. But you have to understand there are other problems that AI is also working at. They're similar, not the same, but I mean, you can almost think like there's other complex problems with carbohydrates. There's other complex problems with lipids or fats. And again, you are proteins wrapped in fat and fueled with sugar. As AI starts working on all of these different things, we're getting, again, even closer and closer to just better, more optimized health. I'm so excited about all of this. And hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Hopefully it made a lot of sense and I wasn't just rambling for most of the time. I appreciate every single one of you for hanging out with me, listening to me ramble on for a little bit. I'm super excited for the next couple episodes. Probably one or two more episodes in this series. And then we're going to be moving on to like talking about AI and education. Equally excited about possibilities there. But again, thanks for hanging out with me, and I will see you in the next episode.